show's over. Turn it back around. Probably something more interesting over that way.
But Arbiter friend?
Thank you. Oh, it's still warm.
Thank you, sir. May I have another? Not!
I'm sorry. Did you mean to suck?
But Arbiter friend! This crap!
Arbiter, you are my hero.
Chief, you may be the dumbest best man I've ever met.
You had me the hero, huh? Well, now you're dead. Now you're a dead hero. And you're actually forgotten. I can't even remember your name.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Halo Lorecast. Lorecastians, Spartans, ODSTs, everywhere. I don't know what to call y'all. So if you have an adequate name that you feel like I should be calling y'all, you let me know. Because I feel like I need a name to kind of, like, visualize y'all in my mind. Because y'all have been killing it on the listens lately. And I thought I'd pay it forward. Again, we're doing another short story. I put down in the description below the first video what we were covering next, just to let you know, and kind of go from there. Needless to say, we're in the same book. We are covering a story in the book Fractures called Promises to Keep. I will get a page count for you right now. It is page 81. Through 125, that's not short at all. It was actually a very long, intricate read. And before I do a deep dive or an analysis on this to the best of my abilities, I gotta say, even though Christy Golden wrote this short story, it felt so much like Greg Bear. It almost felt like, you know, because the story's post-Silentium. So it feels like Greg Bear. It feels like it's right at home. Like there's a solemnness to the Forerunners in general that I feel like Christy Golden and Greg Bear just collectively came together and just nailed the nuance and nailed the language involved to explain every little thing. And I really, it took me two nights to read it because I wanted to get a concise picture of it. But never in my mind did I think, wow, this is out of place. Wow, this is out of the ordinary. No, instead, and as a matter of fact, I actually found myself enjoying it as much as Cryptum, Primordium, and Silentium. I feel like it's an excellent companion piece for those who are even close to interested in Born Stellar or the Isodidact and how his life continues after the fact or what his goal was after the fact. And maybe get some sort of closure because I know that Silentium left kind of off on a bummer note. And this kind of feels like some sort of closure and reverence to just getting a story like a smile. I don't know how else to explain it. It's almost bittersweet. And reading this, I felt so much like this capped off Silentium in such a beautiful and honest and perfect way that I fell in love with it and decided to do as much or actually more research on this. I think I'm going to do a whole lot more research on these. I think the first one was lacking in context there and lacking in a whole bunch of other things. But we are covering Christy Golden's Promise to Keep, which is interesting because Promise to Keep is actually inspired by a poem written by Robert Frost. It's Stopping by the Woods on a Snowy Evening, which is fascinating. I'm going to read it here for you if y'all don't get bored to death. If you don't like poetry, I'm so sorry. You need to like poetry. Like, go read some T.S. Eliot. Read some, like, Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock. Chillax and have an existential crisis. You know what I mean? And so it goes. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmer near. Between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there was some mistake. The only other sound's the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep. So it's pretty much the narrator here reflecting on the journey that he's partaking, you know, traveling in a wagon through the snow, and it's kind of in context. No matter what I have in front of me, I still have miles to go. I have to go because I have promises to keep. And that's kind of the drive for the poem. I have promises to keep, which is such an interesting way for me personally to kind of look at a poem where it's like, why is this driver on this journey? Why are these characters on the journey that they're on? And it's simply because I have promises to keep. And I feel like that's extremely relatable to every single person, because I feel like there's one person in the world that if we promised them we would do something, we would go hell or high water to secure those kind of promises. And I really feel like it relates to this story extremely well. And also, like, promises to keep, it also reminds me of Halo 3, Cortana the Chief, don't make a girl promise you can't keep. And that's kind of the crux of this whole story. This is kind of what Christy Golden had to say about promises to keep. The Halo universe is so rich and complex. I found the Forerunners captivating and really enjoyed writing them. I loved being able to focus in on some of the characters that people already knew and answering the question, so what happened after that? Which is interesting because some stuff happened that after this. So some characters. I wanted to kind of break this down. Some characters that actually show up here. Tragic Solitude. 000 Tragic Solitude. Interesting way for him to show up. Abaddon, first appearance. Chanta Green is great. Faber of Will and Might. Finder of Things Hidden. Glory of a Far Dawn. Growth Through Trial of Change. The Isodidact, though largely called Bornstellar here. It's kind of almost like a Return to Sender kind of thing. Keeper of the Stone Song, Sorrow for Lost Voices, Splendid Dust of the Ancient Suns, who is in Cryptum, Strength of Steady Purpose, and then the Walking in the Light of Fallen Stars, kind of the species that are in this book, of course, Forerunner, San Shion, or short story, mind you, the Flutter mentioned, Human Remission mentioned, Precursor, and the Verusa Tree. Versu. God, if I'm butchering that, y'all fucking correct me right now. And of course, locations, Installation 00, and Mithrillion. We go to Crown and Mysterium, which Mysterium is, that's its first mention, which is really, really cool. And weapons, we have the Z-040 Pulse Grenade, which is, again, a really cool design. I recommend looking it up. And vehicles, we have the Audacity, Bravado, Impudence. Those two, the two final ones, come in kind of at the end of the book. And then technology and kind of equipment. So I don't know why I'm having a brain fart. So some technology and equipment. Artificial intelligence is a big one in this. Cryptum is mentioned, Deadbolt, Domain, Forerunner Personnel Army, Halo Array, Knowledge Engine, Organon, Promethean Crawler, Sentinel, and Slipspace Flake. And this story is pretty central. It's pretty simple, if I'm being honest. And not simple in the context of that, oh, it's like, it's dumbed down or anything like that, because it's not. Basically, all the Forerunners that survived are reseeding life on planets. And it's post 100 years after Silentium. And they're going around these planets reseeding life. And there's this idea, this thought in Bornstellar's head, largely referred as Bornstellar here, to read the message that the Librarium left him. And in Silentium, we didn't go over it, of course. I said I would leave it untouched. The Librarian sent him a message with the tag, the Librarian, which you don't send messages with your name. So he thought it was a trick. He didn't read it. 100 years later, in this moment, he decides to basically read it. And he feels something he hasn't felt before. And of course, everybody is still mourning the loss of the Librarian. Chanta Green, for example, massively mourning the Librarian, largely. And the Librarian basically says, listen, the Domain, we need the Domain. These species can't grow and flourish without the domain. I feel like there has to be a chance to fix the domain, and you need to make sure it happens. I will not die unless I know there's a chance. So go back to Mithrilian and try to see if you can find the domain and basically piece it back together. And they start this mission where they talk to Splendid Dust about his information, because of course he was a higher up, so he has information concerning the domain and at least some interest in it. And they talk about Organon and how Organon is apparently a sentient AI, and everybody kind of scoffs it off. They're like, there's no way this is there's a sentient AI, because we haven't even mastered that. There's no way that the precursors mastered it. And there's a lot of discussion. You know, I was reading a Haruspis article from 2016 about maybe the precursors didn't create the domain. They just protected the domain. So it implies almost like the domain's been there a whole hell of a lot longer than the precursors, which is an interesting thought considering, you know, when the Halo Ray fires, all the information in the domain is kind of lost, but the domain itself is not. It's kind of an intriguing thought, because like if we think to Halo 5, when John goes into the domain, it's basically barren and empty. It lacks the descriptions from the Forerunner saga that we know. And I think there's an interesting discussion there, in the very least, about the domain and what it is and its origins. And we haven't even touched on the origins. Like, the Forerunner saga was one of those things where Halo really kind of needed it, in my opinion, because the Forerunners were just this, like, just sacred thing that nobody really knew anything about them. And here come the Forerunner saga basically laying it out. And now we're getting more stuff about the precursors. And I'm not saying that I want more stuff about the precursors, but I'm saying if we get stuff about the precursors, I mean, Greg Bear, Christy Golden, I think they're your people. I honestly think that, because the way Christy Golden's like prose in this short story was just phenomenally fun and great. But they talk about the domain and a sentient AI, artificial intelligence, and they're just like, there's absolutely no way. So they go back to Mithrilian, and it is completely destroyed and abandoned, as we all know. That's like, it was completely destroyed. Mendicant Bias took over and kind of wiped everything clean. And, you know, there's a somber feeling of how they're the last ones. And not only are they the last ones, that they failed in every single aspect. They may be reseeding life, but it's almost as if, like, especially like Splendid Dust, it almost feels like he failed the mantle, and he took it personally. And we'll get to that later on. But there's so much sadness, and just I feel it when I'm reading it, and this general just disgust about, why couldn't we do this? Why didn't we do that? You know, is this really our legacy? You know, kind of like a legacy of what? Because nobody's gonna really know about this, and it's heartbreaking to say the least. And they're going on this journey, this promise, and it seems like one of those things that just don't exist. And it's almost like a shot in the dark, but they kind of do it. They kind of have to do it because the librarian's so great. And Chantigreen, of course, her and Bornstellar have a thing going on. And they kind of make it down below. They find basically fuel cells that could last a millennia, and only took a couple of them and just kind of left the rest to chance. And they come across some holograms about the event with, like, especially Faber, where they basically locked other people inside a room to kind of protect them. And through the activation code, of course, of Dust. And they come, they relive this horrible moment in their life where they're such somber, where it was just failure all over. And they kind of realize the self-inflicted horror that was caused. And right when this happens, the ship's power cut off, the hologram cuts off, and you hear a loud AI voice basically talking like, "Who are you?" And they inadvertently not dishonor, they I'm having a blank. They kind of rudely say something. I guess that's the phrase. They say something to the AI that kind of offends. They offend the AI, and the AI just kind of disappears. And they continue down their trek, this horror-esque trek, and they run into these things called crawlers, which the Didact created. But it's not the, like, the robotic nature of the crawlers. They're more organic. They're different. And they start shooting them. And it's a fucking horror scene. But eventually, they all kind of, you know, disperse. And you see the AI for what it is. You see that the Organon is actually the Abaddon. And the picture of the Abaddon looks very reminiscent, very, very reminiscent of the Guardians in Halo 5, which is interesting because the Guardians in Halo 5 were kind of designed off of precursor information. And it's even more interesting considering, you know, we know what the primordial look like. We know what some of the precursors look like. And the interesting thing is the Guardians even have the same kind of, like, the Guardians have a terrorizing face, a face that scared the Forerunners who made them. But this Abaddon has a face, and it's so off-putting, and it's unsettling. I recommend you look it up. It might even be the thumbnail. It might even be the thumbnail for this video, because it's so weird. But it's very reminiscent of the Guardians, and it's so interesting to think that the precursors possibly created an artificial intelligence to safeguard the domain, which... It's mentioned that the Organon, as it was previously called, allow them to go through the domain. Wouldn't give them information, but it allowed them to go through the domain unintruded. And it wasn't until Mendicant Bias and the actions that resulted there that, you know, Abaddon kind of went insane almost. And it calls back to, I think, a lot in Halo 5, where it's a lot of Cortana and a lot of AIs almost rising up, kind of losing their minds, you know, processing these things over and over again and worried about the things that are going to happen. You know, a very human emotion, but it's so much different when it's in a individual who has almost unlimited power. And Abaddon basically says, listen, before all this happened, you were going to be judged. Guess what? You're going to be judged now. And it will be cruel. It will not be swift. You will learn pain and everything else because I have learned it from you. So I know exactly what to do. And Chanta Green, the ballsy Chanta Green that she is, lunges down, grabs the key, and then falls down into this big old pit that would supposedly kill them, but it didn't kill them. And Born Seller swiftly follows. Splendid Dust and some others stayed up there to receive their judgment, because Splendid Dust, throughout this whole process, this whole trial, you could say, self-inflicted, obviously traumatized, obviously messed up. And he feels like he needs to take personal responsibility for everything that happened, because he is not only somebody who was up there, but also he's a Forerunner, and Forerunners kind of fuck up. And it's probably the best part of the story, in my opinion. It's almost as if, like, Chaka's with 343 Guilty Spark, like, that revelation just kind of messed me up, and it's like, man, that, you know, we're kind of being robbed of our, or they're kind of being robbed of their agency here. This is very different. To where the opposite, I feel like, happened. But basically, they're trying to get to the domain to put the key in, and that does not happen the way that they think. Abaddon basically manifests down there into the terrifying guardian-looking creature that it is. Causes their AIs to start doing some weird stuff. At first, they completely disappeared, but it seemed like they were in straight-up rebellion. Sounds familiar. And then there's this struggle, especially with Chant, where Bornstellar's standing there, and they have this unspoken relationship where they've been each other's booty call for a while, but they're both grieving over the Librarian. It's a weird thing where it's like, it's not a weird thing. Of course, it's a human thing, but it's almost like that weird thing where like the Ur-Didact is cucking out his wife to the Iso-Didact. It's just a very interesting thing. And to where he realizes in that split moment, first off, he needs a safe Chant, but second off, he loves this woman. And not only does he love this woman, like, he is her life. He would do anything for her. And he does nothing. He kind of stands there. He's frozen in time, reliving kind of this moment again, the same kind of moment that he had with the Librarian. And Abaddon gets tired of this, screams stop, shakes the whole place. And then, of course, Trial snatches the key from Chant and puts it in the domain. And when that happens, you flutter away and disappear. You just die. And what you see, the aftermath of running into Abaddon, was there were Forerunners down under who were completely disintegrated, and then Dust up top for the Trial. Out of the three Forerunners, he's the only one who remained. The other two were also turned to dust. So it's this sad and unfortunate event that they're making a promise to kind of make amends for not only what they did to Abaddon, but and not only to the Forerunner race and their legacy in the galaxy, but also all life going forward. They're trying to make sure that this is a thing. So, for example, when Chief has to go through the domain, when they have to access Forerunner technology, that they're able to do what the Forerunners simply could not. And it's one of those things where it just, it pulls on certain strings, especially after you read the Forerunner saga, where you could see that the Forerunners, the idea of the Forerunners and their mission statement was almost robbing things of their sentience. It's, you know, it's like the Librarian has a, it's one of those metaphysical arguments, you know, almost biblical, where the Librarian, for example, has a certain mission for Chakas and Riser and Bornstellar, and it is their duty and their life to actually do this because they were meant to do this. And Bornstellar has to take on the Didact's imprint. And you know, I mentioned it in the Cryptum episode, I mentioned it in the Primordian episodes, where it was like, it feels like people in charge, in the Forerunners, did not view things as people or human. It's like, they all kind of get robbed of their humanity, and they don't have a say-so in anything. And it's almost like, well, to best protect you, we must wipe everything out. And not only that, it's like, well, Chakas, you, this moment, this whole journey you've been on, it's been destiny for you. But I'm also going to stick you and make you 343 Guilty Spark, which is such a somber thing. And it feels like they're kind of giving it back and giving them a chance again, which I feel like is such a cool dichotomy that's flipped on the head. I don't know if that's the intention. But again, it's a metaphysical discussion. And I feel like, I really feel like more metaphysical discussions in the Halo community would be beneficial. I feel like there's so many cool things and neat things to actually talk about when it comes to metaphysics and choices and destiny and religious perspectives. Of course, we'll get to that because, you know, Broken Circle's coming up soon. But there's so many different things. And what happens is they, of course, get their two ships. They name the two ships, as I mentioned before. And they go back. And they go back to Earth. And they come to the conclusion that Forerunners just have to disappear. And Splendid Dust is like, listen, the only way I can actually you know, be okay is if I stay here with these people. But I don't, like, I don't want to live anymore. Like, I want to be composed. And it's such a depressing thing to think that, like, it's almost like a warrior servant in him, though he's not technically a warrior servant. It's like, I want to continue not only serving the Forerunners, but actually preserving life here as something Forerunner than, you know, going on my life, hating the way that it is, feeling the way the things that I feel. I want to continue doing what I do, just not feel the things that I feel. And they compose him and turn him into tragic solitude for his time, basically being alone, which is depressing. And Bornseller and Chant go off, and the ending is basically them in a sunset. I'm pretty sure they get married, but it's them at a sunset. And it's like, I wonder what... I'll actually read you the quote because it's such a damn good quote. What will it be like in our new galaxy, I wonder, Chant said. He looked into her eyes, placed her hand on his chest. It will be like this, he said, and smiled. So it's like the Forerunner saga was the Aiso Didax coming to be. And this feels, Promises to Keep feels like a return to Bornstellar and the adventure that Bornstellar craved. And ultimately, the peace that, you know, his destiny did not give him in the slightest. And its purpose, its fulfillment, such a beautiful moment in the story. I've read two stories from Fractured so far, and I'm just loving it. And, like, I think the next book is, I think it's part one of Broken Circles, or it might be Contact Harvest. But regardless, like, thank you, Christy Golden, for writing such a phenomenal piece. Like, the Forerunner saga is, I think, breathtaking in a lot of aspects, and I feel like it's extremely hard. And it was probably, while it was fun writing this, it was probably also stressful to kind of create your own prose while maintaining what Greg established. So that's pretty difficult. So this was Promises to Keep and Fractures. Another great short story. Again, like I said, I think the next thing that we're covering is Broken Circle Part 1, or it might be Contact Harvest. I have to look at the schedule, but that's going to be in the description below. Again, I'm going to post a poll down below, especially on Spotify, if you listen on Spotify. I know a lot of you do, about what I should call you folk. And respond and tell me, what do you want me to call you? I mean, we've had a lot of listens over the past couple of weeks, and it actually astounds me, absolutely astounds me, that I can drop an episode 8 months later and the majority of you will come back and listen. That means a lot to me. And I'm on Twitter, and I want to engage with y'all if y'all have Twitter. I know none of you have Twitter, but you can follow at @Halo_Lorecast. Every time I do a story, I will be trying to interact with the author in some way, sort of another. I know authors might not need traction in their stories, but I know that appreciation is welcome. We like to keep it positive here. And any addition of lore to the Halo canon, regardless of if it's controversial or not, is a substantial. And it takes a lot of time and effort, and it takes a lot of love for the thing that we love. So, again, thank you for listening. Until next time, Spartans something?